Welcome to Tax Justice Warriors, a podcast that celebrates the work of low-income taxpayer clinics and talks about issues related to tax news. I'm your host, Omid Farouzi, professor of practice and director of the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic at Temple Law School. So we're in a series now in the Tax Justice Warriors podcast of interviews I conducted with colleagues and students of mine at the Temple Law LITC. This episode focuses on an interview I did of Mary Ann David, an attorney at the Legal Services of Greater Miami. This interview was conducted during the ABA Tax Section Conference in San Francisco in January 2024. Mary Ann, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to be with you, Omid.
So, Mary Ann, tell us about your career trajectory and how you got to where you are today.
Well, it really is quite circuitous. I did not start off doing this type of work. My first job out of college was as a CPA with Arthur Anderson and Company. If you probably don't remember them, they met their demise with Enron back in the early 2000s, I think. But I worked with a lot of attorneys when I was there at Arthur Anderson. I felt like I could do more. So I took a break and I went back to law school. And then right as I was finishing law school, I got married and got pregnant, and so my priorities shifted. So instead of practicing law, I went back to a CPA firm and I was a litigation consultant. And then some years after that, one of my friends contacted me about an opportunity with a real estate development company, and I thought, if I'm ever going to practice law, I should go ahead and do it. So I did. I worked for a commercial real estate company. We were doing shopping center management, leasing, acquisition, funding, financing, that sort of thing. And I did that for 14 years until 2009, when the economy took a little nosedive, especially as far as real estate went. And I found myself out of a job, and one of my co-workers back from the CPA firm contacted Legal Services, and they're like, yeah, come on over. So I went over to Legal Services back in 2009. I was initially doing landlord-tenant work when the clinic director went on maternity leave. They knew I was a CPA, and so they asked if I would just babysit the clinic while she was out on leave. So I learned a lot. I didn't know anything about low-income taxpayer issues. But since that time, she didn't come back, and I stayed in the role, and now it's been almost 15 years. It's a great environment. The work is interesting. My colleagues are just warm and supportive, and my admin department also is very supportive of the tax clinic. So it's just been a wonderful experience, and I'm hoping to do this until I transition out of the work world.
That's wonderful. So you've been at the organization for 15 years?
Yes, since 2009.
And then when exactly did you start serving as director of the tax clinic?
It was about just 2 months after I started.
Okay.
Then, yeah.
So you've been there now in a period where you were seeing the IRS budget basically get cut almost immediately after you got there, and did you find that in real time you were seeing the IRS services get worse for clients? Because I guess when you first started, it hadn't happened yet, but then in 2011, that's when the cuts really started after the midterm elections there. Do you recall like there being a market change then after that in terms of how often you were getting on the phone with the IRS and things of that nature?
Wow, so in the whole 15 years, it's hard to pin down when you saw those types of changes. Obviously, it's very fresh now since we've had such difficulties over the last few years. But did I notice anything marked back in 2011? Not that really comes immediately to mind.
What are some of the most interesting or compelling cases that you've worked on in your time there?
Well, let's see. We just settled one. It was an immigrant single mom. She filed her return claiming the earned income credit, and she was a lawful permanent resident at the time that she filed her return, but she had failed to get a new card, a new Social Security card. So her card had the legend not valid for employment. So on that basis, the IRS denied her earned income credit for her two children. She, being a recent immigrant, was very concerned about having issues with the IRS. So she borrowed money on her credit card to pay the $7,000 tax debt. Oh. So as you know, once you pay it, you're out of audit recon.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe about 6-8 months ago, we filed our first refund complaint to get the money back. And it has been settled by justice. She doesn't have her money yet, but it's a settled agreement. So that's kind of one of the best cases that I've had in all the years. And the truth is, I did work with a pro bono on the refund complaint, so I don't want to say.
what compelled your client to actually pay that debt? Because I feel like we don't see that as much because, of course, people have limited means. And, you know, I'm kind of curious, like, do you see that? Do you also see that rarely, like I do? I mean, it sounds such a unique thing.
I do see it rarely, but I do also see with immigrants that they want to avoid any difficulties. They don't want to have problems with the IRS, especially if their path is leading to citizenship. So I have had, she's probably the only one who really paid it, but I've had others who suggest that they do that. And I tell them that I think that the IRS is a much better creditor than your credit card company. So I usually convince them not to do that. But she had done it before she came to our office. And so anyway, it was interesting. It was a real learning curve. I didn't know which way it was going to go because the IRS is pretty firm that that's what the law is, even though it's not, she had the status and her Social Security card was, her number was valid and she was working legally and she was entitled to it, but they just take the position on that card.
Right, right.
So it took it all the way to go to justice to win.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, congratulations on the victory there.
Thank you. It'll be a real victory when she gets the money.
Yes, and sometimes I know it can be hard because you kind of wonder, you're waiting. And
they did agree on interest.
Oh, that's really good.
So she will be getting interest. It's a 2018 refund, so there will be quite a bit of interest.
So do you, you mentioned working with immigrants. You know, I know you're in an area that's very diverse, that has a large immigrant population. You know, the same is true, of course, in Philadelphia, where I am. So do you work a lot in that tax immigration intersection, or do you see, is a larger portion of your client population immigrants or children of immigrants?
Well, absolutely. My case list is more immigrants by a large number. So we have Haitians and Cubans, other Latin Americans. So yes. The intersection, I think it would be more on providing the education about, if you have a tax issue, it's going to create a problem for your immigration case. So education and then resolving those issues, and then they can move along. But I don't actually do any of the immigration work myself. We have a unit who handles those cases.
And in your offices, there are various different units of all kinds of civil legal aid areas?
Yes. So we have a unit that does affordable housing. We have your traditional housing, landlord-tenant, foreclosure. We have our consumer unit who's handling, you know, used cars and wage garnishments. And then our unit is the public benefits unit. And I'm just under that umbrella. So we have people working on public benefits, food stamps, Medicaid, Social Security issues, unemployment compensation. We have a very robust veterans project. So those are all falling under the health and income maintenance unit that I work in.
And what are some of the most challenging issues that you've seen within the LITC work that you've done? Are there any issues or areas that have been particularly difficult to deal with in terms of like the complexity of them, or the way clients' cases just get wrapped up in a whole bunch of obstacles?
Well, one that comes to mind, which I find so frustrating, is when you file a tax return and there's a mistake on the refund account. And I had one where I really, you know, there's the one where the client saw the return and didn't notice the error. But then there's also the ones where you think that the taxpayer, the one I'm thinking of, she had some learning disabilities, and I think that she was taken advantage of. So those cases are really, really hard to get processed, get the refunds reissued, because the IRS sent the refund to where you told them to send it. So it ends up being a suit against the return preparer. So in this particular case, I just came up empty. I went through TAS, you know, nothing to do. And then the return preparer was indicted.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I took another stab, but I still came up empty, but we referred it out to a volunteer attorney, and she sued MetaBank on the refund agreement. And they settled within a week. So I don't know exactly how that came about, but MetaBank paid the money like right away. So I find those cases really, really frustrating. So another one came in today, and I don't know all the facts about whether it was there, whether the return preparer changed it after the facts. I have to interview them. But I find those very difficult. As far as new cases that I'm finding difficult are all of the 1099Ks and 1099Bs. So I have a lot of clients coming with the AUR and saying, that's not me.
Right.
I didn't have anything with Block, Inc., FKA, Square, or DriveWell. And getting information from those entities outside of the subpoena process, outside of tax court, I have not found a solution for yet. So if you have any ideas about that, I would be very interested. I mean, I sent it to TAS, and TAS said, we can only remove W-2 wages. We can't do anything with the 1099-K or the 1099-B. You have to go to the issuers, which, of course, we already did, sent certified letters. No response. So that is my current struggle.
And do you find that a lot of those cases that you're dealing with end up becoming sort of consumer protection cases in a way, like it's with that MetaBank case that you were talking about? I mean, it reminds me of, I know, you know, Laszlo at Philadelphia Legal Assistance had cases like that. I haven't had one of those yet, I don't think, but I have had cases where somebody got the refund, but someone stole it from their bank account, or somebody had a tax return preparer who stole the refund, and ultimately you end up having to deal with a bank instead of the IRS, really, because the IRS says, well, we already issued the refund to the taxer, we already gave them everything that they were supposed to get. So they've got to deal with it with another entity, and sometimes that can be easier to deal with in some ways.
Well, I think the problem with the bank, dealing with the bank, is that you don't know, like, you have the routing and the account number, but you don't know who it is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were going to sue, you don't know even who to sue.
Right.
I mean, how do you really sue the bank? So anyway, I was just very delighted that one with MetaBank.
That's really
came
good.
Came out successfully. I mean, very poor person.
Right.
And it just took years and years. I think hers was 2017 and it just resolved last year. So that just tells you how long.
Mm-hmm.
How long it went on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've got cases that have years. You know, I'm sure you as well have seen cases that have taken several years to resolve.
Yeah. My oldest one right now is a 28 civil fraud penalty for a recent immigrant who doesn't speak English, you know, low-wage worker.
Yeah.
But his he claimed the American Opportunity Credit. And so so when he got audited and he went back to the return preparer, she prepared a 1098-T.
Wow.
So because there's now this fraudulently filed form, they assessed the 75% civil fraud penalty. The same thing happened for the year later, but he came to us in time for tax court. So I was able to take care of that year. But this year, 2014, I've requested appeals. You know, and then I asked for face to face, because if you saw this person, you know, he just wouldn't be able to type out a 1098-T. It's just not, you know, and you need the mens rea for fraud, and it's just clear to me. But anyway, so 2019, and then the pandemic hit, and then the appeals just affirmed and affirmed without ever having any appeals conference. Not only not face to face, but also not even over the telephone.
Yeah.
So that's been very frustrating. So it's still open because I don't know. Like, I don't know what my next step is. I contacted appeals, the head of appeals in Miami, and he's like, I don't have any way of getting this back in. I went to TAS, and they did one of those where they referred to the technical person. And the remember when several of us clinicians had that problem. So anyway, I ran into that problem with TAS. So anyway, it's still open because I just don't know where to go from here on his case. But that's my oldest one on my case list right now.
Wow. So, being there in Miami, are there any cases that you see that are, you know, I guess a way to ask is, are there any cases you see that are ones where the issues are particularly relevant to people in Florida or people in Miami, like anything that's like kind of unique about them that you maybe wouldn't see elsewhere? Are you ever dealing with any Florida tax issues as part of that? I mean, I know you don't have a state income tax, but you have
sometimes we have somebody who's coming in with the Department of Revenue sales tax issue, but we're, you know, we don't handle those, so we pretty much find pro bono to do it. The only thing I would say about uniquely Miami or South Florida, and it's not really unique, but South Florida was known as the fraud capital. So we were always out on the leading edge of identity theft. Remember when that was big back in, I don't know, 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
And return prepare fraud, misconduct. So those, I think, are more unique to South Florida just because there's so much of it. But it's not, you know, it's not really a unique problem.
Do you do any outreach and education in any interesting areas? Like I got to admit, I haven't been to Miami. I've been to Florida many times, but I think of I imagine like tabling on the beach or something to promote the LITC services or anything funny like that.
Do you remember when the tax were walk-in sites? You didn't have to appointments.
Yeah.
And so I used to ride my bike to work, and I would go right by the IRS building, and the line would be around the block.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, I could just put a table there. I'm sure, you know, security would be on me immediately. But I always thought that would be a good way to work. But right after I had my idea, they moved to the appointment process. So anyway, so that was that. I do the problem solving days. So that's another opportunity where the lines are around the corner. This year, what was really big on problem solving was the TPP. I mean, everybody in line.
Tax Air Protection Program,
right.
Yeah.
But we are participating in the little LITC pilot.
Yes.
So last year we couldn't help, but I think this year, I think we can help with that because, you know, the TAC office was just overloaded and they, you know, ended up turning people away at, you know, 3:00 saying, like, you're just not going to get in today. So anyway, I think that's something that we can do. As far as other outreach, we do all the regular social service agencies. We do a little bit of high school work.
Wonderful. Yeah,
we do all your elected officials, you know, the commissions and the representatives and the senators, the homeless shelters, the DV shelters. We've gone to Key West with the LTA and done problem solving days down there. And that's nice because they have access right on the spot of all the transcripts. So you can really idea of what's going on. If we're there without them, you can do the interviews and see what they have, but you don't actually see what's going on at the IRS level. So I haven't had any Native Americans, so that's sort of on my list for this year. I don't really know how I'm going to make any inroads, but that's one of the things, like, it's not understandable to me, like, how in 15 years
right
I've, you know,
Yeah.
Unless there's something unique about South Florida and natives and tax issues and they don't have them. But that's one of the things I'm looking at this year. But that's kind of what we do for our outreach, community ed.
So for the last question I wanted to ask you, it seems like in your life you've had kind of things that have happened that have kind of ultimately led you to other places that you perhaps didn't expect. You mentioned that you went to law school and then your personal life developments with getting married and having children, and that steered you a different way. And then you had mentioned that you were affected by the Great Recession, and then that led you to go to legal services ultimately. So what would your advice be for young tax lawyers or young professionals even generally who are thinking about their career plans and trajectory and what is ahead for them?
Wow. I mean, definitely doing the clinics in law school is a great way to get some experience and real knowledge about what the work is like. VITA also is a good way to see what tax returns are all about, meeting people, interviewing people. Like, they're real life skills, participating in those. Otherwise, you know, joining organizations. One of the organizations I belong to is the South Florida Tax Litigation Association, so that group gets together five Wednesdays out of the year, and we have speakers, or we'll just have a, you know, bring your issue, bring mm-hmm. something interesting. So being out in the community, getting to know people, I think that would be my recommendations to a young person. It is actually really fun when they do come to our meetings, you know, because, yeah. you know, a lot of the people who are there have been participating in this group for 30 years. And so suddenly you have, you know, somebody who's new and is talking about what they're doing. So.
Just showing up and getting to know people is so important and makes a big difference. I think that's really good advice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Marianne. Thanks
so
much.
My pleasure. Thanks for
joining
us. Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you so much for listening to Tax Justice Warriors. You can visit our website at taxjusticewarriors.com. Please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. The views expressed on this podcast are not official opinions of the IRS, the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Program, or the employers or people who spoke on this program. Your tax situation is unique, so do not take the statements on this program as legal advice. Consult with your tax professional if you seek specific advice. There are now three things that are certain in life: death, taxes, and your subscription to the Tax Justice Warriors podcast.